We begin with a strong statement from Genesis chapter 6, verses 5 and 6. The Lord saw how great man's wickedness on the earth had become, and that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time. The Lord was grieved that he had made man on the earth, and his heart was filled with pain. Did you know God feels pain? Is this new to you? I'm not sure that we ever see this except in this spot right here in the Old Testament. We see that God feels pain, and we can make him feel pain. The straw that broke the camel's back, which brought humans into the unenviable position of being at the business end of the flood, is found in Genesis 6:2. The sons of God saw that the daughters of men were beautiful, and they married any of them they chose. We went through this last week, but let's recap. Marriages between fallen angels and human women contaminated the human gene pool and spawned nasty giants. This was an attempt by Satan to sabotage the plan of God to bring a redeemer into the world. It stands to reason if the gene pool was contaminated, Jesus could not have been born from it. And Satan almost succeeded. He was only 8 people away from total success. Some scholars suggest that Satan was not just messing around with a human gene pool, but he was messing around with animal life. Various strains of dinosaurs, which were unnaturally built, seem to prove their case. The argument goes, God would not have made an animal with a body too big for its skeleton. Look at this guy. What's he going to do with those stumpy little arms? God's creation would have been perfect, not oddly sized, stupid, and ineffective. But now the whole creation, both man and animal, were so mutated that God needed to start over. As we read Genesis 6, we get a complete picture of the absolute godlessness that existed in Noah's world. As the population grew, each generation moved further and further away from God. Soon there was an entire population which had removed themselves so far away from God that there was no return. God could not reach them anymore. Genesis 6 shows us the depths of evil that humans can reach, and it is bottomless. Genesis 6:5, every intent of the thoughts of man's heart was only evil continually. Humans can sink so far that God isn't even a thought in their heads. The longer man lived, the greater their moral corruption became. God couldn't just let them live forever. They were living for hundreds of years. But God needed to cut their lifespan, because the longer they lived, the worse it got. And God finally put a limit on human life. Genesis 6:3, then the Lord said, his days will be 120 years. Before this, it was not unusual to live for 800, 900 years. Today, the lifespan is well under 100 years. God has had to keep limiting human life because our hearts are set upon every evil imagination, and the world only grows more and more immoral and corrupt with each passing day. Some people look at this text and say, you know, it really wasn't very nice of God to send the flood, was it? Well, let's just think about this for a minute. Imagine if criminals today got to live for 800, 900 years. They would have the opportunity to inflict more and more evil upon the world. This is exactly what was happening in Noah's day. God had to put an end to it. Honestly, it would not have been nice of God if he didn't stop it. God said, my spirit will not always strive with man. This means God will not put up with sin forever. This is one of the reasons why we should respond today to Jesus instead of waiting for another day. Into this chaotic setting, Noah was born. In the middle of this great boiling evil cauldron, there was only one man who had the right credentials to be used by God, just one guy. Can you imagine that? There's only one man on this earth who had the two characteristics that were absolutely necessary for the job. Genesis 6:9 tells us what these characteristics were. Noah was a just man and perfect in his generations. The first characteristic was that Noah was righteous. And the second was Noah had an uncorrupted genetic profile. Noah was a righteous man, but we know he wasn't perfect. He fell into sin after the flood. Noah was perfect in his generations. This means he had a pure genetic profile. This is the biggest reason why Noah was chosen. Satan had been unable to corrupt Noah's family gene pool. Taken in context with the previous four verses in Genesis 6, this means Noah didn't have Nephilim genes. Noah was chosen primarily because his genes were not contaminated by an unholy alliance, so Jesus could have been born from his line, genetically uncontaminated. Genesis 6:10, and Noah had three sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth. By their genetic relationship to Noah, they get to survive the flood. God uses them as a foundation to restart the entire human race. We are not told whether or not Noah's sons were good men. We only know they did not die in the floodwaters because God liked their dad. Later, we find out that one of his sons, Ham, was decidedly ungodly. Scholars believe that Ham's wife, Mrs. Ham, had Nephilim genes. This is why it is believed the Nephilim popped up again after the flood. They show up hundreds of years later in the Old Testament in scenes like the 12 spies in the Promised Land and in David's encounter with Goliath. It is believed Nephilim genes still exist on this earth today, and if you're asking, I buy it. Jim asked me, is there any hope for someone who has Nephilim in them? Absolutely. We have the same chance at forgiveness as anyone on this earth has. We all have had bad ancestors in our bloodline, but Christ's death on the cross canceled all of that out. God tells Noah in Genesis 6:14, make yourself an ark. The ark was massive. God gave Noah a blueprint and said, okay, now you build it. And this thing was massive. It really wasn't as much of a boat as it was a well-ventilated barge. Its major job was to float and not really sail. The shape of the ark was something we all have in our closets, a shoebox. So how did Noah fit all these crazy animals into the ark? Well, the ark was gigantic, and the average size of a land animal was smaller than a sheep. The ark was big enough to carry two of each kind of animal. That's about 700 pairs of animals. So there would be two dogs, not two poodles, two huskies, two German shepherds, just two dog dogs, whatever the earliest version of a dog was. If the ark actually did carry two species of animals, there would be about 35,000 pairs of animals. So we know that wasn't possible. The ark was three stories tall. It was taller than the Leaning Tower of Pisa. It was so tall you could put 520 modern-day railroad boxcars into it. It was the equivalent of about two football stadiums or 21 basketball courts. Expeditions have been launched looking for the ark. Satellites have been positioned, computers, powerful cameras, and other sophisticated equipment have been implemented, all just trying to pinpoint the exact location of the 5,000-year-old wooden ark on the top of a mountain in eastern Turkey. Many have failed. Others have even died trying. A select few have claimed to have seen evidences of Noah's ark. People of all ages and cultures have never given up searching for the ark in spite of death-defying climbs to the to the top of Mount Ararat. If Noah's ark is ever to be found, it will be the greatest archaeological find ever. I believe Noah's ark existed for one simple reason. I believe the Bible. I believe the whole thing, every word. But if you need more convincing than that, there is extra-biblical evidence that Noah's ark existed. Ancient history supports this fact. In 275 BC, Berossus, who was a Babylonian historian, wrote, "But of this ship that grounded in Armenia, some part of it still remains in the mountains, and some get pitch from the ship by scraping it off." Genesis 6:14 talks about the pitch used by Noah. This pitch is a petroleum product. And here's an interesting story. John D. Rockefeller looked for and found oil in this very region based on this very verse. Around 75 AD, Josephus said the locals collected relics from the Ark and were showing them off to people. He said all the ancient historians he knew of wrote about the Ark. In 180 AD, Theophilus of Antioch wrote, "The remains of the Ark are to this day to be seen in the mountains." There are many similar stories about Ark sightings. Some of them are more current in history. There have been many more recent attempts to find the Ark, but I think it's possible that God hid the Ark. My theory about this is, if the Ark were ever to be found, people would make it into a shrine, and then it would be worshipped. In short, it would become an idolatrous site. I mean, people will worship a pancake if the image of Christ shows up on it. The Ark was Noah's project. He wasn't to contract it out to someone else. When Noah was given the staggering job to do, he just did it. He didn't complain, rebel, or say, "I think I'm getting a cough, God." I believe we are all given tasks by God. Some of them are hard to do. Some of them are hard to understand, but we must do the work. Some people might laugh at us, but we have to do the work. We may be the only ones doing it, but still we must do the work of God. Here's an interesting fact to me. After 120 years of banging away on the Ark, Mrs. Noah is still hanging in there with Noah. The dude is building an ark in the desert before anyone has ever seen a drop of rain. Noah comes in for dinner one night and says, "Honey bun, this stuff called rain is going to fall from the sky, and so we're going to need a boat." Either she's very loyal, has nowhere else to go, or she also trusts in the Lord. Based on Genesis 2, 5, and 6, we can safely assume that the earth had never seen rain. It is reasonable to say that Noah didn't have the dimmest, dullest notion of what God was trying to say to him. Yet Noah didn't question God. Noah just did the work. Noah prepared for rain, even though he'd never seen it in his whole life. 2 Peter 2, 5 says, "God protected Noah, a preacher of righteousness." Noah wasn't just building the ark, he was preaching to the people. He was trying to convert them, trying to get them to repent of their evil ways. Yet in Noah's 120-year ministry, no one converted. No one got saved. No one came around to his way of thinking. If we look farther into 2 Peter, we can say that Noah was troubled by the songs of the drunkards and the evil deeds being done all around him. He was troubled by the hopeless condition of his fellow human beings. The people of Noah's day didn't realize what was happening. They were too busy with other things to really care about Noah's sermons. Yet he did not quit. He did not give up. He just kept doing God's work. Sometimes people will do some of what the Lord commands them. Then they get mad at God because he didn't do what they thought he should be doing. It's like when the doctor tells you, you need to do this, that, and the other thing. Do you do all that the doctor tells you to do? If you want to get well, you do. In the same way, complete obedience to God's word is the only way to be saved. Well, Noah's family finally does enter the ark. In Genesis 7, verse 1, "Then the Lord said to Noah, 'Go into the ark, you and all your household, for I have seen that you are righteous before me in this generation.'" Here's another interesting thing about this story. God does all the talking. Noah does all the obeying. Noah never speaks. In our relationship with God, we need to let him do the talking. We need to do the obeying. And that's exactly what Noah did. He obeyed everything the Lord said. The text says it this way: Noah did all that the Lord commanded him. Anytime you see the word ark in the Bible, you know someone is about to be saved. Here, Noah and his family will be saved. Fast forward 850 years later, and Moses will be saved when his mother makes him a basket made of bulrushes. We all believe that this was a cute little basket with a lid, kind of like the Lonja Burger baskets. How do you say that? You know that basket company? It was very famous. Well, this translation isn't quite right. In the Hebrew, this says it as plain as day. Moses' mother made a little ark. Later, the Ark of the Covenant was a symbol of salvation for the wandering Israelites. Because God puts Noah and his family inside of the ark, we know God is going to save them. He is going to protect them. He is not going to let them go down with the others. Only he isn't going to save them from living through the flood. He isn't going to put them into a coma and then wake them up when it's all over. Noah has to live through the flood, but he will be saved from it. Some of us will be delivered from trouble, and some of us will get delivered through it. Noah has to go through it. If you think living on a huge barge with hundreds of animals for over a year was easy, you've got another thing coming. But after Noah goes through the flood, he was delivered. Isaiah 43:2 says, "When you pass through the waters, I will be with you, and through the rivers, they shall not overflow you. When you walk through the fire, you shall not be burned, nor shall the flame scorch you." An honest question is, why do I have to pass through the waters and walk through the fire before God rescues me? Can't he just prevent me from having to go through these things in the first place? Well, most of the time, God rescues us while we are going through the trial and not before the trial happens. God lets trials come into our lives, and we have to live through them. God didn't save Daniel from being thrown into a lion's den, but God did save him from being eaten by the lions. God didn't save the three Hebrew boys from being thrown into a fiery furnace, but he did save them from being burnt alive. God didn't part the Red Sea before the Israelites arrived. He waited till they got right up on it. In each case, God saved the people while they were in the middle of the trial, and he did not save them from having to go through it. God allows us to go through trials, through waters and fires, to help us to grow spiritually and then to develop endurance in our faith. These challenges can strengthen our character and ultimately bring us closer to God. God has also built us an ark. It's the ark of salvation. Jesus invites us to get on it, and God will deliver us in the end.